Timeshare owners, this is an urgent consumer alert from Resort Release, a national company specializing in helping consumers legally get rid of their expensive timeshares. Once you've made that decision to get rid of your timeshare for any reason, Resort Release is offering a Better Business Bureau accredited way to legally get rid of your timeshare guaranteed. We guarantee to get rid of your timeshare payments permanently. Even if you've tried another company to get rid of your expensive timeshare, call now and see if we can help you. At Resort Release, you don't pay anything until you're ready. If you're ready to learn how to permanently get rid of your costly timeshare, make this complimentary free call right now.
800-455-7967. 800-455-7967. 800-455-7967. That's 800-455-7967.
Rab Coins of Flemington, New Jersey has been in business for over 40 years. We are highly competitive buyers of gold, silver, and platinum coins, jewelry, and scrap metals, and have recently been named the exclusive gold buyer for Diamond Nation and HealthQuest. We also provide professional appraisals, sales and liquidation services for individuals, law firms, estate trustees, and bank trust departments in New Jersey and Philadelphia. Products and services include gold and silver, American and foreign coins, certified rare date and modern coins, numismatic supplies and books, gold, silver, and platinum bullion, paper currency, United States proof and mint sets, including current issues. From junior collector to the experienced investor, RabCoin has been for the industry since 1974. Founder and owner Randy Block has been an expert and an active member of the coin industry for over 45 years. Visit us at 56 Main Street in historic downtown Flemington or call toll-free 1-800-819-9875.
Welcome to Destination Hockey on the Hunter and Chamber Radio, the voice of business. We're going to do the weather before we start off the show. Tonight it is mostly cloudy with a low of around 37. It will get cold tonight. And then tomorrow it is mostly sunny with a high of 75 degrees. We've got a sunny weekend, the first one of the year. It's finally spring weather. So that's your weather. We will be right back with Paul Stewart, one of the greatest NHL refs of all time, an NHL player. I'm very excited for today's interview. So we will be right back.
Are you looking to get your message in front of a qualified audience through all the noise out there today? Consider taking an advertisement out on Hunter and Chamber Radio, WHCR, DB, the voice of business. Contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org.
Are you struggling to find the right person to stay in a critical role in your company? Trying to attract and retain millennials? Regional Personnel is your staffing solution. Located in Lebanon, New Jersey, Regional Personnel is an ASA-certified, privately held staffing and recruiting firm providing you with everything from temporary to permanent employees. As ASA-certified professionals, we employ the latest tools and techniques to find, screen, and present to you the best talent that fits your needs. The result? Access to top talent in the shortest time with the lowest chance of turnover. We guarantee it. So call Regional today at 908-534-8113 or visit us on the web at regionalpersonnel.com.
Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's physician referral service at 1-800-511-4HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. please call NAMI Hunterton at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterton, the voice for mental health in Hunterton County.
Welcome to Destination Hockey on the Hunterton Chamber Radio. This is your host, David Lazar, and today we have a very special guest on the show that I'm very honored to speak to. We have Mr. Patrick Stewart, Mr. Paul Stewart, and he is able to offer some very amazing insight into the NHL, into the reffing world that I've just never been able to speak to before. I'm so excited. And I just want to ask, you've seen both sides of the game. How was the transition from player to ref? Hello. Can you hear me?
Just about.
Okay, I'm going to raise my mic. Can you hear me now?
A little better.
Okay, how about this?
The marvels of Thomas Edison.
Okay, great. So I'm on full volume right now. Hopefully this is good. I just introduced you, and I just wanted to ask, you've seen both sides of the game from a player and a ref perspective. How was the transition from being a player to a ref?
Well, I had the great pleasure of being able to officiate a lot of the players that I had been teammates or had played against once I had made it to the American League and the National League. The fact is that two of the years of my career spent in the WHA, there were some guys like Messier and Gretzky and Gordie Howe that I had known, and having been on the ice with them as players, my intro to them with regard to gaining their respect was a little easier than, say, a rookie coming off the buses. The fact is that overall, I brought to the table a player's feel for the game, and I had to utilize that to substitute for the lack of experience that other referees had had over the many years. Many of them took 6, 7, 8, 9 years to get to the National League if they made it at all, and I took about 2.5. And that hurt a few people. But overall, I would say that I found my proper niche.
Yeah, that's great. You did touch on that lack of experience. One question I have, I know my friend who's a ref, aspiring ref right now, I'm just wondering what kind of programs were in place for a player to transition from a ref that the NHL, that hockey, just the leagues out there had in place to help players?
Well, there weren't many because of the fact that the numbers of former players at the professional level who then took on the stripes was a very small number. And if you think back, it was a fellow by the name of Cleghorn back in the 20s and 30s that played in Montreal, and he officiated for a while, and another fellow named King Clancy, and some others that had minor league careers like John Ashley. But the interesting thing is that in the various leagues that I had played in, I had led the leagues in penalties, because that was my key to being able to get onto pro teams back in the 70s, a la the Philadelphia Flyers. So, and then being an American and a college guy, all of those things, which may seem like a positive to others, were certainly not a positive to the Canadians that were running the game. So those aspects were things that I had to overcome. But in 83, when I was somewhat blackballed by college, American college hockey, because of my dastardly reputation, I went at the invite of Scotty Morrison, who was the vice president of officiating, to the International School of Officiating, and it was run by, who's now just recently passed, the late, great Bruce Hood. And along the way with the instructors of John D'Amico and Leon Stickel and Mark Perry and other different folks that were actually, at that time, NHL officials. Don Kolarski was another. I was able to meet many of the supervisors, Frank Advari, John McCauley, Scotty Morrison, Lou Mascio, etc., and to the point that I gained an invitation to the NHL training camp in 83 after the August 83 International Bruce Hood School of Officiating. And from there, it was assignments in junior hockey and then in the International League, working the East Coast, or at that time the Atlantic Coast Hockey League. So I gained a lot of experience just by doing many, many games, as well prep school and college, some college games in the New England area. And eventually went on in my second year of officiating, working the American League and the International League. And then my third year, I worked the American League pretty much, and all of the other games were with the National League. So it was, you know, it was a gradual process for me. Couldn't happen fast enough, but by comparison to others, there, you know, it was really a rocket trip for them to appreciate my rise. But I grew up in a family of officials. Mm-hmm. It wasn't like we were sitting around the Thanksgiving day table talking about Martha Stewart. Bill Stewart and Bill Stewart Sr. were fellows who had officiated NCAA and Stanley Cup Finals. So pretty much the conversations at our table were about hockey and sports and how to officiate. And going back to your original question, considering that there have been very few people who have transitioned, I think the only guy now is Dean Morton, and there are a few other new ones, but not really anybody that played in the National League.
Yeah, and you did mention your father did influence you. There's a lot of content up there on Hockey Buzz and other websites about your father. How did he help influence you on your journey to becoming an NHL referee besides the dinner time conversations? You know, how did he really mentor you?
Well, it's interesting. The title of my book, soon to be published, is called You Want to Go. My dad would stand in the kitchen and his bag at the door and say, I'm going to Harvard tonight. You want to go? Or I'm going to the Bean Plot, or I'm going to Cornell this weekend. You want to go? And the real interesting thing was that I was a great admirer of my dad. And he did three sports, and he coached three high school sports. So my being 3 feet from him most of my life certainly had a lot to do with where he and I went, but also my admiration for his life's work. And you know, the old expression, apple doesn't fall far from the tree. I wanted to be like my dad. And although I did teach a bit in school, he taught for 37 years. He was the Mr. Chips of Boston English High School, starting off as a gym teacher and ending up in his final year as the headmaster. So, an athletic director, and as I said, if you take all of his sports can combine, he's the winningest coach in Massachusetts high school history.
Yeah, so you definitely have that influence. And when you were making your way up through the hockey reins, you played with Mark Messier in Cincinnati. And then when you were a ref, you did have some history with Eric Lindros, another generational player. What has it been like to both play and officiate some of the greatest hockey players of all time?
Well, certainly Mark Messier and I bought him his first beer when he was 18 in Cincinnati. And we went into a bar called Sleep Out Louie's. And at that time, the drinking age was that, 18. Mm-hmm. So yeah. I walked in, and he had on a plaid shirt and a pair of bib overalls and work boots. And Pete Rose was sitting there, and I knew Pete. And Mark went to the bathroom, and Pete looked at me and said, what did he do, fall off a tractor? And you knew the guy was going to be a great player. And he was so immensely strong and had such great skating style. I used to laugh at him out on the ice. He'd be caustic or a little upset at some point or another, and I'd say to him, careful now, settle down, or I'm going to tell everybody about your only goal in the WHA. He shot it from center ice, and he went to the bench and sat down, and the thing bounced four times and went over the goalie stick. So I think, and people that don't understand this have to understand that we each had our jobs. When I was a Cincinnati Stinger, I had my job there. My job was to make sure that Robbie Fatorik and Mark Messier and Mike Gartner and others could play their game. And when I got to the refereeing side of it, my job was to make sure that we kept it fair. And even though we interacted and may have conversed, it was always a sign of respect.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that a lot of people don't realize that my greatest fear was in doing something in a game as an official that would lose the respect that I had earned. Mm-hmm. And so thus I drove myself to always be constantly working at a high professional level. And yet, I had a lot of fun out there.
Oh, yeah. A lot of fun. It seems like a lot of fun. And you did mention your role, the enforcer, the fighter, the protector. And that's something that we don't really see anymore. Islanders, my favorite team. Ross Johnston comes up, first enforcer since Matt Martin, really. And fighting, it's something the fans love. But it's a major cause of concern, whether it's with concussions or other concerns, the speed game in the NHL, lots of things. Does it have a place in the sport anymore like it used to?
Well, there are many factors that have changed in the game of hockey. Amongst them has been the intrusion of parental guidance. It used to be that players would leave home and go off, and their coaches and managers would guide their careers. And for better or worse, that was the system. And along the way, whether it was a junior team in Canada or an American college, pretty well the parents entrusted the player to the coach, and that was that. Now you see players suing their coaches and parents getting involved. And then, of course, there's the inevitable aspect of agents, which are in some ways a necessary evil in some senses, because the owners of olden days, not all but some, were so devious in the way that they dealt with players. I think of Gordie Howe and, you know, the whole idea of what his pension is, even what my pension is, how bad it is. And so agents perform a necessary good, but they are a necessary evil. And now players getting to the fighting are less interested in sitting for 5 minutes when they could be on the ice scoring a goal and padding their statistics and trying to increase their net worth. And with the starting salaries at $950,000 for a rookie coming into the league, guys don't want to get hurt.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, when you think back to 1975, when I started playing in Binghamton and I was under the Rangers contract, the fact is that they groomed me to bring me into the National League as a tough guy. They also brought along Danny Newman and Nicky Fatiu. And I think that, you know, we all know that the Flyers had their group and other teams had theirs. So it wasn't as if we went into the war disarmed. We knew what we were doing, and we accepted our roles.
Yeah, another area where the game is really changing is technology, specifically with the goaltending interference and offsides calls. How have you seen technology really taking over the game for the better or worse, and how has this changed the NHL that we once loved?
Well, it's not just at the NHL level. It's at almost every level, anywhere that anyone has a cell phone or anyone has opportunity to video a game, because now we're getting into minutia. Originally, when the National Hockey League instituted the goal camera to view plays at the net, it was only to decide if the puck had crossed the line or not. And it was going to be an assistant tool for the officials to be able to see something that the fellow sitting at home drinking his beer could see on hockey night in Canada. We'd be in Toronto and couldn't see the goal, see the puck across the line, but the guy up in Timmins, Ontario, with a six-pack of Molson's could sit and see it. Well, the fact is that it's now become such a crutch that officials now don't necessarily get to the net, as we've seen in games in the Stanley Cup playoffs where pucks have gone in and they haven't gotten to the net. And then the camera, instead of being a problem solver, has become a problem creator. Because now more and more minutia has filtered into the whole equation, and it's made it so that now we're looking at whether the player's skate was an inch above the blue line, and it's gotten to the point, and now we have a major penalty, and the referees can go into the penalty box and look at that. You know, it's now not a tool. It's now a crutch. And I think it's done something which it partially explains why fighting is out of the game, why hard hits aren't as necessarily a part of the game as they used to be. And I'm talking about clean and legal hits, too, and the hip check and all this. It's because everything is reviewed. And players are afraid to play with gusto or play with recklessness. And now everything's calculated because everything's taped.
Yeah, and you've written extensively on this issue of goaltender interference. And one thing that I really like that you bring up is the people, not the players, making these rules, they really don't have any experience with officiating. So why do they not have referees on the board to make these decisions with video review, goaltender interference, offsides? And what do you think it would take to clarify these confusing offsides, goaltender interference rules that are now conflicting with technology?
Well, I was an Asian history major at the University of Pennsylvania. I often used to tell Gary Bettman that the Ivy Leagues run the league. And he would look at me and say, really? And I'd say, well, you went to Cornell and Bill Daley went to Dartmouth and I went to Penn, so we've got it pretty well covered. But Joe Neuwendijk's the Cornell guy, too. But pretty well what I think is that the Chinese say a picture's worth a thousand words. And if you really want to conclusively train and educate not only the official, but the players, the coaches, and the fans especially, but more so than anyone else, the media, they need to put together a comprehensive tape and not act as if it's the nuclear secrets of Los Alamos, and show it to people and instruct them as to what is and what isn't goaltender interference. And there, and thus, the remedy would be there. And so as a fact, I think it's something that across the board we can educate players. Because what happens is with the style of the crease becoming ever larger and the player's size, not only their natural physical birth size, but their equipment size has made it so that more pucks are shot wide or over the net and actually hit between the 4x6 area. So what I'm saying to you is that so much has changed in the scoring of goals in the NHL that what we need to do is come up with definitive video answers. And if we can do that, then I think we may have at least a little better handle on what is and what isn't a goal.
Yeah, that's a great point. It's really, really interesting to get your perspective on that because this is something that has been debated for years and we rarely hear someone involved in officiating commenting on it. It's always the players, it's always the GMs, it's always the coaches. Rarely do we have someone who really knows the rule book like you speaking on it, which
is
another problem.
Let me just add to that. It's not because of the fact that the officials don't know anything about the game. It's because of the fact that the attitude of people across the board in hockey at all levels is officials are a necessary evil. And I can tell you, I'll give you two examples on how this is manifested. There are some rinks where I went as an official that you barely got a dress room big enough for the three fellas, never mind the fourth. Or you would go after the game and look for a sandwich because you'd be getting out of the rink at 10:30 and if the game went into overtime, it could be midnight. And there wasn't a place to get anything to eat and you had to drive 50 miles to get back to the hotel and there was nothing. And the fact is that other than, and I'd say 99 2/3% of the trainers always treated us well, but there was always a contempt with management. And it's not all management, it's just the attitude. And even in high school and college games, I tell people all the time, don't put the referees' rooms at the front of the rink. Put them at the back so they can stay out of sight and get in and out of the rink safely. Because nowadays, attacking an official seems to be like another season out there that people just declare they have fishing season, hunting season, then they have attacking the official season. And the fact is that it's become such a problem that on the Today Show 2 weeks ago, they did a whole story on the declining number of officials in games. They even talked about basketball officials in Indiana that they can't get enough in Indiana. That's the Hoosier State. That's where basketball is a religion.
Oh, yeah.
But you can't get enough officials to work. Why? Because of the attitude and the treatment of officials by the fans, by the coaches, by the teams, and it's scary.
Yeah, it really is. It's almost like a stigma.
USA Hockey is finally coming around to having earlier registration in a recruitment program to get more ex-players or more current players into officiating as a part-time job.
Which is great.
And I'm telling people, the NCAA tournament this past week, the officials work, and the referees are making $500 a game. Hmm. And I pay high school officials $110
for
an hour and 50-minute game where they hand you the puck and call you sir at these Ivy League prep schools.
Wow.
And you go to Harvard and you're making $400 plus expenses. And really, I mean, in a clean rink, in a nice environment. And, you know, there's a lot to be said for working a weekend and making $1,000 in 6 hours.
Mm-hmm. That's amazing. I know some people who are listening who are excited for this interview. RPI graduates, Cornell graduates that I know, they were excited to hear from you because hockey is like a lifestyle there. But it's not a disrespectful, it's not people taking anger out on the refs. It's a very friendly, you know, team environment where people are really nice there. So it's really...
Oh, no, and then don't get me wrong. I mean, you mentioned Cornell and RPI. I mentioned one name out of all of those two schools in that union as well, Ned Harkness.
Mm-hmm.
My dad was personal friends with Ned Harkness. And we would go to Cornell or we would go to RPI, and I would be the stick boy while my dad's reffing the game. And we would go to Dartmouth, and Eddie Jeremiah was the coach, or Cooney Weiland at Harvard, or Jim Fullerton at Brown, all legend, Murray Murdoch at Yale,
yeah.
All legendary Hall of Fame guys. And they had class, and they treated the officials with dignity and respect. It didn't mean that there wasn't friction. And I tell people this, friction's part of the game. We live for it.
Mm-hmm.
But once it's over, it's done, we move on. And you'd be surprised how many times I've had contentious words with coaches. And then a month later, we're sitting at the coaches' convention in Florida, in Naples, and we're standing and having a beer with one another. And there's
mm-hmm.
that respect.
Yeah.
It's not always that people are going to love officials. But the fact remains, and my attitude has always been, I'm going to earn your respect. And you better give it to me if I'm doing my job. End of story. And
yep.
I did it with enthusiasm, with honesty, and with integrity. And last but not least, enthusiasm is one thing, but passion is another.
Yeah, definitely. A legend in the field, you know, first American to reach 1,000 games. Reffing, you know, first American to play. And ref, really an American icon for refs, for players, and it's really great to see. And currently you're seeing these players that are taking the stage. Sidney Crosby is one of them. I want to touch on him. He's a legendary player right now, and he gets a lot of calls. He gets what people would call freebies. From a neutral outside view that also knows officiating, do you think he gets too much leniency from the modern-day NHL refs?
More things have changed, the more things stay the same. Substitute Crosby's name, put in Gretzky. People would say that they didn't call him Wayne, they called him Wine. And the fact is that I never had a problem with that guy. And if I was on the ice with Crosby, the same as I was with another guy in Pittsburgh 66, Lemieux, we developed a respect for each other. And certainly my admiration for his abilities was second to none. And on the ice with Ray Bourque and Stevens in New Jersey and Joe Sakic and I can go down the list of all these great names, Guy Lafleur and others. And let me put it this way to you. A lot of them got the calls because their ability and their talent, they were doing things on the ice in their skates with the puck that other guys couldn't do. And so a lot of times if they got tugged, yeah, maybe they helped it along, but not always. And the fact is that they got a lot of ice time. And I tell my referees this in college hockey. especially in late games when you got a kid like Donato. Or BC on the ice, especially in late in the game. Remember, if they're down by a goal and they put those guys out there, those are the guys that are going to get fouled because they're going to have the puck, and they're going to be the one that may score that tying or winning goal. So keep an eye out for them. It's not that they're getting preferential treatment, but the fact remains that they're getting the treatment that anyone that has the puck should get. It just so happens they have it more than anyone else.
Yeah, that's a great point. Unfortunately, I've got so much more to talk about. I've got a whole outline, but we do, unfortunately, have to go to commercial. But I do want to first touch on this. There was a terrible tragedy that happened in between our last show, which was two Wednesdays ago, and today. It was the Humboldt Broncos bus crash. Tragic, absolute tragedy, and it was really unfortunate to see. I know there's the sticks out. Everyone's putting their sticks out, which is a touching tribute. You've been writing a lot about it. How has this personally affected you, and what have you been doing to respect the loss?
Well, I have a 20-year-old, Macaulay, named after the late, great John Macaulay, who's had a concussion and is not playing, but he referees. And I see him going up the street in his car, and the weather isn't always so great, and my heart's in my throat. And then I have another son who's 16, and he's playing in a national junior team, and he's flying here and going there. And I drop him at Logan Airport, and my heart's in my throat again. And the fact remains that I can't imagine what the parents of those players is going through. But I can tell you that it's not the first tragedy. There was a bus crash years ago with Lethbridge, and a lot of those fellas passed. And then I was in Russia when the locomotive team crashed with Brad McCrimmon as their coach and killed the whole team. And I think that we go through these things, and certainly Tim Horton and his car accident, and Pelle Lindbergh and others, and the hockey family, even though we're frictional at times, is still tight enough to stay close. And the human part of us is that I have children, and, I it's not right for parents to bury their children. And I even now, you can hear it, I get emotional about it. And I know one of the fellows who lost his son, and he was in the league when I was reffing, and I just, I can't imagine what they're going through. And it's a terrible thing. But long story short, time and tide, and we'll move along and we'll close ranks and keep marching, but we won't forget these kids.
Yeah. Very, very well said. Our thoughts and prayers go out to the 15 victims and their families and the whole hockey community. Terrible tragedy, and if there's, I hate to say there's good coming out of it, but it is really nice to see the tributes and the $8 million raised, and to focus on the lone positive, I would say it's really nice to see the hockey community coming together as one and rallying together. So that is nice. So thank you so much for coming on, Mr. Stewart. It was an honor to speak to you.
You're the only
so
guy
much.
That calls me Mister.
Oh yeah, I'm still young. If you couldn't tell, I'm still young. So whenever I get a guest, they're Mister or Mrs. Unless I know
I'm
them.
I'm young at heart.
You are young too, but you're I still try to be respectful. I'm always so thankful to speak to people like you. You really gave a great interview. People are already texting me about how great you were. I'm very thankful you were able to come on. I'd love to have you on again and talk about some of the questions we didn't get to. It was just fantastic to have the opportunity
That's
to speak to you.
And just send me the link, and I'll put it up on Hockey Buzz, my
Great.
Daily blog. And I look forward to hearing from you again.
Great. Again,
Good
thank
luck
you.
In your career.
Thank you so much. I will email you the link. And again, that was Mr. Stewart. Thank you so much for coming on the show. We unfortunately
Take care.
Yep. Have a great day. So that was Mr. Stewart. We do, unfortunately, have to move on to a commercial break. This is the longest we've ever gone without one, so I hope you guys have enjoyed it. But we do have to take a quick break. We'll be right back talking about the New York Islanders' offseason struggles.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com, brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
This is Tony Clark, Para Planner at Patton Heidi & Associates. Americans believe they should be in charge of their own future, how they will live tomorrow. Since 1894, Ameriprise Financial has worked for their clients' futures, helping millions of Americans retire on their terms, when they want, where they want, doing what they want. Today, Pat and Heidi and Associates, a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., remains true to the vision of always putting clients first. We are ready to help you put a confident retirement more within reach. Put the strength of a leader in retirement planning to work for you through a personal one-to-one relationship. Pat and Heidi and Associates will work with you to develop a plan to help you pursue your retirement goals. Call today at 908-713-6600. Office is located at 1318 Route 31 North, Annandale, New Jersey. Investment advisory products and services are made available through Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., a registered investment advisor, Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., member FINRA and SIPC.
Advancing Hunterdon is an ever-sharp focus on the growth and prosperity of Hunterdon County's businesses. Advancing Hunterdon engages businesses within and throughout the county that are responsive to a call to action as the next chapter in business success. If your business and organization wants to get engaged, contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. Advancing Hunterdon, a roadmap for economic growth for the business community of Hunterdon.
Welcome back to Destination Hockey on the Hunterdon Chamber Radio, the voice of business. That was a fantastic interview with Mr. Stewart. I'm so thankful he was able to come on the show. And for all of those listeners coming over from Hockey Buzz or his Facebook or Twitter, you are in for a treat, because if you're unaware of the dysfunction in the New York Islanders organization, buckle up and get ready to listen about some of the craziest things you've ever heard. John Ledecky, the Islanders owner, is just this fan favorite. Everyone loves him. You know, he's at every game. And he promised the local people of Long Island an arena in Belmont, and he was very happy about this. He put on a press conference, he put on a party, fans were happy. Since that announcement, Islanders are 20-30-8 in their final 58 games of the season. They basically completely shoot themselves in the foot as they're ending their season, and Islanders fans want someone to pay. They want accountability. Accountability is defined as the quality or state of being held accountable, especially an obligation or willingness to accept responsibility or to account to someone's actions. Accountability is a word that John Ledecky has prided himself on. It's become one of his key words. He says it all the time. He says he's going to hold people accountable, yet he is refusing to fire Garth Snow, the general manager of the last 12 years, who has only brought 4 playoff series. John Tavares, he's only won one playoff series with almost a decade of one of the greatest players I've ever seen, and it's really unfortunate. And the Islanders have their media day, their locker clean out. John Ledecky gets up to stage and says this.
Thanks for coming. I have a brief statement today to make on behalf of the Islanders. We are committed to long-term success. Any decisions we make are for the long-term success of our hockey club. We win and lose together as an organization, not as individuals. Missing the playoffs is beyond disappointing. At the same time, we believe we have a strong core of players that will be the basis for our success on the ice. Obviously, our definition of long-term success is competing every year for the Stanley Cup and eventually winning a 5th ring. Our season has just ended, and as an organization, we will be evaluating all aspects of our hockey operations, and then we will make decisions based on what is best for the future of our club. I am not here today to talk about any specific individuals, including players, coaches, and the general manager. We believe that it is essential to our success to have a thoughtful evaluation process to look at the past and, more importantly, assess the future of our team on and off the ice. As for the past season, as owners, we have failed. We sincerely apologize to our fans. We want to express that our ownership group is totally committed to winning and providing the resources to do just that. I want to thank all the members of the media for coming today. We know you have a job to do, and we will be talking together again in the coming weeks and months. I am now going to turn this media conference over to Doug Waite and Garth Snow. Thank you.
So this guy gets up there, preaches accountability, yet he won't talk about individuals, and he says there's a solid team on the ice. They lose, you know, 20 out of 50. They win 20 out of 58 games. I'm just really concerned hearing this guy who went from a legend amongst Islanders fans. He rides the train. Everyone loves him. To now he's turning into a villain. I've heard comparisons to President Snow. That is comparing Garth Snow to President Snow from The Hunger Games, who is a dictator who kills children every year in a terrible tragedy that was The Hunger Games in this fictional novel. I've heard comparisons to John Spano. This is a popular one. John Spano buys the team, is bankrupt, doesn't have any money, yet is a fraud and convinces NHL management that he can buy a hockey team. I've heard comparisons to this, and this isn't just on the depths of Reddit or Twitter. This is Islanders fans starting to rebel. Islanders fans on Twitter are starting to come together, boycott the team. You know, they're starting to really be negative, and Islanders fans are really negative, for those of you who don't know. But the negativity has just skyrocketed exponentially now, and we're seeing this fan base really, really angry. The New York Rangers, they're a team. They were pretty bad. They decided to write a very well-constructed letter to their fans saying, we're going to get younger, faster, we're going to sell off some assets, and we will get some future ones in return. They get Ryan Spooner, Vladimir Nemestikov, like three first-round picks, really do a great job with their rebuild. And now they're signing Ilya Kovalchuk. Within 1 year, they could be back with first-round picks, with prospects. They almost finished better than the Islanders. If we didn't go 3-0, the Rangers would have done better after basically writing a letter to their fans that they're tanking. Islanders are a laughingstock. And John Tavares, one of the greatest players of this generation, is a free agent. And the Islanders are at risk of losing him. There's just so many problems with this team. On the ice, they allow a power play goal in their final nine games. They finish with the lowest penalty kill percentage in franchise history, which put them at 73%. That is the worst in the NHL since Toronto was a 72.7% in 1988. I mean, this is just like really bad stuff here. And yeah, John Tavares loves Long Island. He loves this fan base. He loves what he's built. But there's just a lot of stuff on the ice that could convince him to go elsewhere. The fan base, though, they love him. John Tavares loves the fans. I was very proud to have pushed forth this chant idea. I wrote on Eyes on Isles an article that got a few thousand views. People started talking about it. On my Instagram, Drive for Five, I started the post that circulated a lot. Other Instagram accounts followed. The idea of a chant was kind of building up for a while, and I was happy to play a part in getting this idea across that Islanders fans need to show John Tavares in some way that he's appreciated. After the game, he commented that this chant was very nice and he's thankful for the fans, and he said he always loves Long Island fans. John Tavares loves the Islanders. He loves the fan base, but Garth Snow, management, and Doug Waite could possibly lose this guy. Just listen to the fan base just showing their love for this guy. It's really just unbelievable. That's supposed to be a Let's Go Islanders chant, but instead fans are taking over the final 5 minutes of their final home game and chanting John Tavares nonstop for 5 minutes. That type of stuff is beautiful. You rarely see it, and you rarely, rarely see it out of Barclays Center, an arena that fills up about 9,000 a night, most of which are fans of the other team. It was really nice to see fans kind of come together and show John Tavares this support. But you have this management, you have this group of individuals that seem more like a cult, seem more like a dictatorship than they actually seem like a competent group of guys who can run a hockey team. And it's really, really concerning. Scott Malkin, haven't even touched on him. This guy is the majority owner. Gary Bettman refers to Islanders owners as Scott Malkin and company. This guy has not said a word since buying the team. Literally not a word. He apparently is the financial guy who puts forth the money. John Ledecky is the one who is always doing things with the fans, always at the game. Scott Malkin doesn't show up to games. He doesn't comment on anything. He's the owner of the Islanders. Garth Snow holds about 2 press conferences per year. I've said this so many times on the show, it's like it's from Orwell's 1984. It is like censoring free speech. It's concerning. The Islanders, the billboard campaign, fans go up and put up a billboard. John Ledecky apparently invites them to the game, the billboard organizers, at the trade that they would bring the billboard down. Really some sketchy stuff. This is like stuff that you're reading not just from, you know, unverified sources. You're reading this from, like, reporters. That is really, really concerning. There's a lot of fishy business going on, and it could be what sends John Tavares off to Montreal, Toronto, or San Jose. Or even the New York Rangers or New Jersey Devils, 2 potential options. Lots of bad stuff going on. Islanders fans love John Tavares, but the main point I'm trying to make here is John Ledecky embarrasses the team at Media Day, walks to the back of the room after speaking that 2 minutes that he spoke that I played earlier. Garth Snow takes over, blames Joshua Hosang, just says some bad stuff. Doug Waite mainly keeps quiet. He's watching from the back. This is just unprecedented stuff. This guy leaves the stage to go to the back of the room and watches from the doorway. The Islanders management is going to cost themselves a chance at re-signing one of the greatest players of the 2000s, of this decade, of this century. And Islanders fans right now are sitting back and watching and biting their fingernails. There are polls all over that I've seen. Would you rather have a clean house of management or re-sign John Tavares? Fans are willing to see a full-on firing of Garth Snow and Doug Waite instead of re-signing Tavares. That's how bad it's gotten. This fan base is in uprising. It is in a fight. And I try to stay positive. I talked to Patrick Dowd. I sat right next to him at a game on March 30th. I love this guy. He's the most positive person I've ever met. But even in an informal setting at a game, you know, we were talking about some of the problems. There's a lot of stuff wrong with this team. John Tavares hopefully sees through it, and we get this guy to stay. But again, I'm not sure it happens. But speaking of the positives, if you are coming over from, as I said earlier, Mr. Stewart's website, NHL draft's probably something you're focusing on. The Islanders will be big players in the NHL draft. In addition to their own draft picks this year, the Islanders own Calgary's first and second round picks in the upcoming entry draft. So the Islanders hold the 10th pick and the 11th pick, plus they hold 2 early second round picks. That gives them a 6% chance of winning the draft lottery. That's great. Islanders have 2 draft picks. Garth Snow will be the one making those picks, which is concerning, but there's a lot of talent there. The top 15 players in this draft are really, really good. The Islanders have 2 chances to get a solid defenseman, a solid goalie, or a solid forward. Really happy with the draft, the Travis Hamonic trade, which was Travis Hamonic for a 1st, 2 seconds. Islanders also gave up a 4th round pick. But, you know, they have 2 draft picks. That'll be nice. But the Islanders finished the season 3-0. If they finish 0-3, the Islanders have the 6th and 11th best odds. That puts them at 11%. The Islanders can't even lose correctly when they have to. And I talked about tanking last time. Teams don't purposely lose. We got to see a fantastic win against the Rangers and one that saw the John Tavares chance. We got to see a really, really nice overtime win against the Red Wings, one that saw career highs being broken, one that saw John Tavares just absolutely light it up in overtime. And, you know, we almost cost the Flyers a chance at the playoffs. So winning 3 games was really nice. But again, now the Islanders are in a little more trouble this offseason. But I'm okay with it. The Islanders had some really, really good players this year. Josh Bailey established career highs in goals with 18, assists 53, and points 71. Really, really nice season for him. He even battled injuries, but he gets his contract extension, 6 years, $30 million. That's not a bad extension. That's a really, really nice extension for him. Longest tenured Islander, really excited to see him play. Anthony Beauvillier, future star, career highs in goals, 21, and points, 36. He tied his high in assists, and my favorite memory of the season was in Dallas. The Islanders have a game in St. Louis the following night. Anthony Beauvillier, they're down 5 with like 4 minutes left in the game. They're on the penalty kill. Anthony Beauvillier steps in front of a shot of the from the point, hits him right in the knee. This guy is on the ground looking like he's going to vomit. He gets up. He's really, really struggling. What does he do? shot goes back to the point, comes towards the net. It hits him in the same exact spot. He is down. Refs blow the whistle. This guy looks like he's going to die. You'd think he's out for a while. He's only out for a little bit, day to day. Gets sent down to Bridgeport, comes back up, establishes a dynamic duo with his best friend, Matt Barzal. This guy is for real. Another good, really good player. Thomas Hickey, career high in points, 25. Tied as high in assists. This guy's going to be a good player for another team next year. I just don't see the Islanders re-signing him. And then Anders Lee, 40 goals, 22 assists. Really, really nice stuff out of him. 62 points. You can't spell Islanders without Anders. And he gave him hell this season. He was one of the best players. He needs a contract, though, next offseason. So will he get re-signed as well as Jordan Eberle? I'm not sure. And then Thomas Hickey, with also a plus 20, led the team in that category. And how about Ross Johnston? 62 penalty minutes. He comes up. When he played, would be a Patrick Stewart type player, a Paul Stewart type player. Excuse me, I don't know why I said Patrick. My bad. And I must be thinking of Patrick Dowd. But he's a Paul Stewart type player. He's the type of guy who goes, beats the crap out of people, and really just really, really nice stuff out of him. He's an RFA. He could be back next season. So for those of you coming over, that's the Islanders. Few positives, lots of negatives. John Tavares is a free agent. What will happen? When we come back, we go over the NHL playoffs, which start tonight. Very excited for that. I will give my predictions. We'll also give a local preview of the New Jersey Devils, another team I'm very excited for. So please stay tuned during this brief commercial break. We'll be right back to Destination Hockey on the 100 in Chamber Radio, the voice of business.
One of the biggest decisions in your lifetime is buying or selling a house. Choosing a realtor with strong client communication, technology, and marketing skills will dramatically improve your chance of success. That's why Hunterdon and Somerset's residents rely on Joe Peters. Joe believes his clients deserve a smooth and seamless experience, not a roller coaster ride. As a Coldwell Banker sales associate with 20 years of experience, he's helped hundreds of people to achieve their goals and dreams, no matter where they were in the buying or selling process. Joe accomplishes this by approaching every transaction from a business perspective. Initially, he tries to fully understand your goals and dreams and make them his own. Then he takes the mass amount of data that's available and distills it down to a few understandable action points. And finally, he controls the entire process through technology and marketing. The end result to you is a smooth, rewarding customer experience. Let Joe show you how to take his professional expertise and put it to work for you. To contact Joe, go to jpeters.com or call 908-238-0118.
Everybody over there!
Get on up!
Everybody out there!
Get into it!
Everybody right there!
Get involved!
Everybody, you!
Did you know the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce has over 20 active committees that you can participate in? Committees range from focus on business and government to economic development to events like our annual business expo. Contact the Chamber for more information today at 908-782-7115 or email us at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Boston Bruins, Nashville Predators. Two surging teams coming on late into the playoffs. Those are my two picks for the Stanley Cup. I'm going to go round by round, game by game, pick my playoff predictions, and hopefully when all is said and done, we can look back at this archive and I will be correct. But that is most likely not going to happen. But here we go. Nashville, Colorado, a really exciting matchup between two young teams, Nathan MacKinnon versus Ryan Johansson in the defense. I've got Nashville in five. Winnipeg, Minnesota, Battle of the North. I'm going to go Winnipeg in six. Vegas Golden Knights. Really excited for this game. Vegas Golden Knights, my favorite team besides the Islanders. They just impressed everyone. Coming from Vegas strong. Really excited for them against the LA Kings. I've got Vegas in seven. Anaheim, San Jose. Battle of the Pacific. I'm going San Jose in seven. Then I've got Tampa, New Jersey. Give me New Jersey. I'll take the local boys in six. Boston, Toronto, that's going seven. I'll take Boston. Washington, Columbus, expect a sweep. Washington's going to be on fire this year. They've got the chip on their shoulder. They're not the super team like they always are, which really doesn't work for them. Philip Grubauer is going to dominate. And then Pittsburgh, Philly. I hope this goes far, but I don't see it happening. I'll take Pittsburgh in five. Second round, Nashville, Winnipeg. This is the matchup we've all been waiting for. Looking forward to this one. I'm going to take Nashville in six games. Vegas, Anaheim. Oh, Unfortunately, I think Anaheim is just too much. Jason Chimera goes up for 7 hat tricks. Give me Anaheim in 7. Devils, Boston. The Devils are atrocious against Boston. I think their short Cinderella run comes to an end here. I'll take Boston in 5. And then Washington, Pittsburgh. Every single year we see this matchup, every single year we have the same results. Pittsburgh in 7. So now you have Nashville, Anaheim. I'm going to take Nashville. That's my cup prediction. Anaheim's run ends here. Anaheim's a sound team, but Nashville, just on paper, really, really amazing defense, of a solid team with a lot of depth on offense, and a great goaltender, possibly Vezina winner in Pekka Rinne. I'll take Nashville in 6 games. And then Boston, Pittsburgh. This is a tough one. I want to pick Pittsburgh, but I'm going to go with Boston in 7 games. So now we've got Boston, Nashville. This is a really interesting one. I think Boston and Nashville are just on paper the two best teams. They're the most complete teams, really good coached. Peter Laviolette, Bruce Cassidy. I'm going to go with Nashville. Just kidding. I'm going to go with Boston. And I will take Boston in 7 games. This is going to go the distance. Boston upsets on home ice. So those are my playoff predictions. The Boston Bruins, I did a segment on them earlier this year. They are just so complete. They've got like 25 players on their team that are either injured, healthy scratches, all the way from Brian Gionta and Tommy Wingles at the bottom to Patrice Bergeron, Charlie McAvoy, Zdeno Chara, David Pastrnak, Brad Marchand at the top. They've got a goaltending tandem. They've got physicality, trade deadline acquisitions. This team is managed right. This team does everything correctly, and I cannot see them losing, even to Pittsburgh. I'm sure that watch them lose first round to Toronto, a young team. Their only weakness is that they get out, someone comes in and just skates around them and is too fast for them. They're a big team. They don't have a ton of experience. They've got a lot, but not a ton. Those are the weaknesses with this team. There's really nothing. And now with the Devils, 3-0 against the Lightning this year. They are giving up 41 shots a game to this club, but Keith Kincaid is just a wall. I'm predicting New Jersey to get the win in this series. And some upset teams, Boston, Washington, Vegas, and Nashville. First round, I think, need to watch out. I'm sure a lot of these teams will get the wins, but they are on upset alert, especially Vegas. I love Vegas, but seeing them beat, they've proven everyone wrong all year. Again, they've proven everyone wrong all year. But them beating L.A., which is tough, a lot of people are picking L.A., and then to go and beat the Anaheim Ducks or San Jose Sharks, two really tough matchups. And then to go on and beat Nashville to get out of the West, not sure it's happening. I have them losing to Anaheim. I'd love for them to go all the way, preferably beating the Devils in the Stanley Cup. But Vegas, they've taken the hearts of so many dealing with tragedy. And I would not be surprised if they prove me wrong, prove everyone wrong, and go and win the Stanley Cup. But I'm going to stick with Boston. So to end the show, again, the Humboldt Broncos bus crash was a tragic event that took place on April 6th. I've been putting my stick out. Everyone has. It's been a really sad event for the hockey community, but everyone has been able to rally. We are going to end with a moment of silence for the victims lost, the 15 who were killed and the 14 who were injured. We will end with a moment of silence on the show, and then we will head to the news. So thank you so much for listening, guys, and have a great day.
The news is sponsored by the Hunterdon Medical Center. Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call